right, hello everyone and welcome back to the Relay Bitcoin podcast, today with a very special guest that is in a very special location, Matej Zak. Am I saying this right, by the way?
Yes, that is correct.
Matej Zak, he's the CEO of Trezor, a hardware wallet provider you probably all know, or you should know. It's one of the best ones, I think, you know. The biggest one, obviously, is Ledger, a hardware wallet that is around for a long time and is very big, has amassed a lot of funding, is a huge startup. And they did a good job, but also they had a couple of problems lately. So not every Bitcoiner is a fan anymore of Ledger. Then there's Bitbox, which is a great alternative that we've also partnered with Relay, which is a Swiss open source provider. They also have a Bitcoin only version, which is great. So we really like and refer them. But also Trezor is probably in Europe the oldest brand for hardware wallets. And they have an amazing team, very, very nice product, also open source. And they've done a lot for the Bitcoin community in the last couple of years. And we're also good friends, you know, we always meet at these conferences and we're also working on a partnership. So that's I'm super excited about that. Matej, how are you and how did you get the CEO position? That would be my first question, because I know you're not one of the founders, right? But now you became a CEO. How did that happen?
Correct. So yeah, first, thanks for having me, and I'm happy to be here, talk Bitcoin and all things related. Like the story goes, I joined the company 4 years ago. Actually, maybe even before that, because I think you mentioned something like that we are one of the oldest brands in the hardware world, let's say industry. And in fact, we were the first one. So we were the very first, our founders were actually the first ones to invent the concept of the hardware wallet, which is, you know, kind of interesting and exciting, obviously, because that's we have sort of a lot of legacy to keep building on. I came as I would say, second generation of the, let's say, new talent joining the company. I joined 4 years ago as a product manager. And I kind of built my way to the top in terms of leadership by building, you know, the product team first. And I think we are very, very much product driven company where we really try to focus on our users and our needs of users. So that's why, yeah, eventually it kind of made sense to take over, because, you know, our founders, they are, by the way, still very much involved in everything that we do with Trezor. And, you know, and they always say, like, they haven't built the company to, you know, to make money or anything. They just were on very specific mission to make, you know, private keys secure from the Bitcoin. And you know, and people such as myself, I think we basically help to put everything in structure and really try to make the business great and you know, have as big of an impact as we can through the means of our products and basically the solution we give to the users. So yeah, that's how it went. And after those 4 years, I basically now I'm doing a lot of other things than just product, as you can imagine.
How did you get into this industry? Were you already working on a Bitcoin or crypto startup or anything before, or was this your first related job?
It was my first job in Bitcoin, let's say, and crypto security. But my background was basically startups. So I started two of my own companies. Somewhere one is still alive. The other one was pretty much a huge fail, you know, so, as it often goes with startups. But I think I learned a great deal, and eventually it led me to Trezor, and I'm very, very happy with that, of course.
And was it also in these startups that you learned about Bitcoin, and like, why did you choose to join a Bitcoin / crypto startup?
Yeah, so it was not related at all. Actually, like one of the first startup was basically related to live streaming and live streaming technology. The other one was bike sharing, like electronic bike sharing. So, you know, way before it was sort of so widely available, let's say. I got to know Bitcoin through means of basically my friends who were interested It could have been, I don't know, 2015, where I first, you know, kind of got involved with, yeah, basically through this like a startup course that I did, and we had one sort of segment on you know, fintech, quote unquote, and I think that's where I first, you know, kind of got involved, and that's where my interest, you know, I got very much interested back then, so.
And was it an intentional decision then to also professionally, like once you were interested from a private point of view, that you also wanted to join then a startup in this Bitcoin industry and like that you want to devote your full like professional time to this?
Not specifically, but I think I was mostly interested in solving like a huge scalable issues, I would say, or like issues that could be solved by some, you know, putting some scale into it. And so when I first actually met the founders, they kind of introduced me this idea of they want to make this like great app, and there's like it's a huge challenge how to basically make it more available to the mainstream. And that got me like super interested because I saw it was like a huge challenge, or so there was a lot of unknowns for me. I didn't really know a lot about it, like technically, et cetera. So that's, I think, what mainly got me interested, right? Like the first conversation we had, I basically applied for a job, you know, on a site, through some of my friends. But yeah, like this huge challenge that really sparked my interest for sure.
And so you did you take over the CEO job in the end? Like, so you said you applied there and you became a product manager probably, right? And
Yes,
then you
correct.
basically worked your way up. And then was it until was Trezor led by the founder until then, or was there a CEO also in between that you took over from?
No, actually, one of the founders was a CEO up until basically January of this year when I took over the CEO role. But we are very much involved with Slash, one of the founders and CEO, like. In the product making, so we would basically meet for the past 4 years. Like we would basically meet every week for, you know, like at least an hour or two, like to discuss something product related. So obviously I got like a lot sort of involvement in his thinking because I mean he's a great visionary. Probably like your audience might know him as well. I mean he started the first you know Bitcoin mining pool. And then they invented basically the concept of a hardware also. So he's really the, you know, the OG with big O. And so like it was great to get like sort of my hands dirty in the product making, but led by somebody who is like so sort of knowledgeable about this. And I think also like the way it went was basically, I mean, I'm the kind of guy who likes to fix stuff. Like, I don't know why, but there's this obsession where I see something's not working right or something's not like functioning well. I get very obsessed with it and I have defended tendencies to fix it. And I sort of, I don't even like, you know, I didn't even ask. I just go and do it, right? And I think that's something that worked well with our sort of, let's say the culture of the company and our like relationship with the founders where, you know, I would basically come to them. I would say, like, yeah, this is a problem, and I'm either going to fix it or I already told them, you know, and it's been fixed or something like this. And they were like, yeah, great, like, well, go on, you know, continue. So, and I think that's, and by doing that, it eventually led me to this role where it all makes sense to sort of because we also, you know, have been growing as a company quite a lot. So when I joined, there was probably less than 40 of us. Now it's we are getting closer to some 150 people mark this year. So you know obviously it needs a lot of sort of structural changes and it's constant sort of involvement of the org structure and the teams and sort of probably like the biggest thing I like the most in my job is basically the matchmaking of like the talents to the specific need that we have, right? Like in any of the teams. So when I see somebody's like doing something really well and they are sort of flourishing in certain area, I try to find them the projects that really, you know, help the company as well. So it's like I think like a huge win-win. And so all these kind of changes are sort of never ending thing, and I really enjoy doing that. So I think that's what one of the reasons why I also took over this role.
I love how you frame it that you are the guy who fixes things because there are people, we had this discussion a lot lately as well. Like, there's always the need in every scaling up company when it gets, you know, bigger and more complicated, that yes, there needs to be a visionary that like initiates new projects, has new ideas, is creative all the time, moves fast, breaks things and stuff. But this also creates a lot of chaos. And so there always needs to be, you know, either it's a CEO or a COO or a CFO kind of personality. But next to the visionary, there always needs to be someone that fixes things and that, you know, does things correctly, putting processes and systems and structures in place, you know, so that everything really gets to the ground. So really like the implementation moves forward. If you have just a vision, there are very, very few people that can do both. Like, for example, Steve Jobs is maybe one exception, or Mark Zuckerberg, or, you know, there are a couple of them. But in most cases, this doesn't work. You need both of these people. This is something that we are also kind of not struggling with, but that we are observing at least and working on at Relay. Because obviously I'm more also the, I wouldn't call myself visionary, but I'm more the creative person, let's say. And so I also need to surround myself with better, more structured, more pragmatic people that actually can, you know, implement all the stuff and also prioritize and cut down, you know, to the focus of where we really want to go. Because otherwise you would lose, like these visionaries then would lose themselves at one point.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're perfectly right. Like at some point also, like the prioritization is big topic as well, because there's always like way more ideas that we can sort of come up with as opposed to what we can really deliver like in the execution phase, right? So I think it's also a big part of this, of my role, is basically trying to narrow down what really the focus should be. On based on sort of where we want to get, and place where we want to get is basically to onboard as many users as we can to self-custody in a hardware wallet, to make it really super easy for them to understand. You know, we still know there is, you know, close to basically 500 million people on exchanges. And, you know, we want to give these people to sort of the comfort of self-custody and to onboard them. So, but, you know, like the way to do it, sort of the solution, we have like so many different ideas, and specifically the founders are, you know, still throwing a lot of things at the teams. And really, I think at the end, it's really a lot about, as you said, about the prioritization, because, of course, you can do only so many things, you know, with certain size of a team. But it's also one maybe thing I would mention as well, like related to the discussion, we are self-funded, you know, we don't have any VC money now. And I think it also means the growth that we are trying to do, because you mentioned this, like move fast and break things. So I actually sometimes say, even as a bit of a joke, like move fast and don't break too many things, right? Because, because like, I think we try to grow. Yeah, exactly. Like we try to grow as much as we can, of course. But also like to a certain point where it doesn't really break a lot of mainly things around like people. For example, like you see a lot of companies, you know, hiring a lot of people in the space, and then through the cycles, you know, through the Bitcoin cycles, as we know, then they tend to like fire also a lot of people. So that's something we try to avoid for a couple of reasons. One of them being sort of the main reason is basically because we invest a lot of sort of effort into these people and, you know, teaching them about, you know, Bitcoin, crypto, and the way we do things. And then it really makes sense to keep the talent over longer time, right? So these, and of course, like morally, of course, it has some issues as well. You don't want to like fire, you know, like people and give, you know, put them in some difficult situation, like in their personal life. So, you know, like this moving fast, definitely it resonates with me as well. But I think we try to be a bit more conservative and find this like balance where we can really push for the growth, but still do it in a way that is a bit more sustainable, I would say.
about Relay Private. It's our exclusive service for private clients, small offices, small to mid-sized businesses, or just anyone looking to stack more sats with a higher volume. As a Relay Private client, you'll have access to a dedicated account manager, a team, and obviously a white glove service to help you with your Bitcoin needs. You also get personalized 24/7 access to our team, and you are in it for the special selection of reports and data we are sending to our Relay Private clients. If that sounds like something you or someone you know should like, send them to relay.app/private or click the link in the description below.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I think, a very important thing that you still have the full control over these things, because the more VC-driven you are, the less... sometimes the less control you have over these things. And that's what you see with, for example, Ledger, right? They just scaled this huge organizations with hundreds of people and raised hundreds of millions as well. But now they're also firing a lot of people. They're making strange decisions. It's definitely to have still this autonomy to set your own priorities is definitely super valuable. So what are the priorities that you have set for Trezor for the upcoming, you know, let's say a couple of years maybe? Where do you want to go?
Yeah, so the ultimate goal is, as I said, to onboard as many users as we can to, you know, self-custody and a hardware wallet. The target audience is generally the most obvious is the exchanges. You know, we see it quite... It's very pragmatic, like when FTX happens or yet another, you know, exchange kind of go bust or, you know, banks go bankrupt, we see really a big spike in our sales. So, you know, the message is there and the solutions to the problem of like really try to own your own, you know, like crypto and Bitcoin, then it's quite clear. So that's the general sort of objective, and that's what we are after. That's why we exist, I would say, right, as mm-hmm. a company. The way we want to do it, we definitely want to launch new hardware. So we have two models now available of the hardware wallet, but we are going to launch actually quite soon a completely new model. So that is this year. And then we plan to launch two more next year, year after, so 2024. And we also want some accessories with those and one extra service. Unfortunately, that's too pity, like I cannot go give the specifics about the specific mm-hmm. service, but like because it's I really wish we can launch this soon and finally I can talk about it. But yes, so those are the objectives. Like we are, you know, predominantly sort of we are living out of selling hardware, so hardware is definitely number one that we are focusing on, but there are other things as well. And maybe just to wrap, maybe for users who for your audience who might not know us, you basically you know, sell these hardware wallets, but we also provide users with this apps, both the desktop, web, and mobile app, where you can basically check your portfolio, and even actually buy and sell crypto. Right.
Yeah, that's also interesting about your company is that even though you're not venture funded, you grew so fast with both hardware and software, right? So you have both these components, and you're innovating on both. So you said that there will be a new device, new hardware. Which mm-hmm. I think in the last couple of years, there was a lot of innovation, also driven by Jack Dorsey's Block, for example. They are coming mm-hmm. out with this new, or came out, I think, with this new hardware yes. wallet.
BitKey, I think is the name. Yeah.
Yeah. Blockstream mm-hmm. is also working on their mm-hmm. trade thing.
Correct.
Was it Ledger that hired this Apple designer to build this, you know, very nice
yes.
looking. I haven't tested it out, but like it looks kind of like it's supposed to be the iPhone of hardware wallets, you know, with a mm-hmm. big touch screen and stuff like that. So there's a lot of innovation going on, which I really like. So is there anything you can say about this new device or not at all?
I mean, I can say, this the one we are getting closer to, there will be like an Anche model, right? So it will be like a smaller additions to the general innovation that you just talked about, but we also the flagship that we are working on and we're going to launch next year will be a way more, let's say, wireless. So there will be a lot of wireless technology that we want to mm-hmm. put into it, and I think it will be very cool. Also, you know, discussing some, you know, biometrics and stuff like that. So I think that's you know, again, like it really goes down to, so, you know, us as a company and the hardware wallet industry is still coming from this a bit of a geeky space where we want to enter more of these like mainstream consumer electronics, you know, like feel and look and feel of everything we do. So again, like all these, the flagship product, and actually all our products are basically targeting the usability. It needs to be really fun to use those things, to use these products, and that's what we, you know, always kind of think of and try to innovate.
Right. Do you think, so if we think back, I remember when I was a teenager, the iPod came out, like I was an early teenager. The iPod came out, and there was also the first versions of an iPhone. So I remember I walked around with an iPhone and also an iPod. And then my, I don't know who it was, someone, some family member, I don't know who it was, said, why don't you just have one device? Like, you can listen to music with your iPhone. Why would you have both? And I was like, yeah, that's actually true. So then I kind of listened to music from my iPhone, and I only had one phone, which I found pretty cool. And obviously now no one has an iPod or an MP3 player or a Discman or, you know, whatever we had. Obviously, it's just the phone that does everything. Do you think that for Bitcoin, for holding and spending and transacting with your Bitcoin, your money, basically, will there always be the need for a separate hardware, separate device as we have it now? Like most people have their phone and they maybe have the Relay app with some sats on it, and they buy and sell and they send and receive, they pay and stuff. But they also have their Trezor, their hardware wallet dedicated because it's more secure, and they have it like a safe where they have the majority of their Bitcoin on. Do you think that there will always be this separation, or will this maybe also like merge? Is there a possibility to keep the whole safety but kind of have it integrated in something like an iPhone, or I don't know? How do you see the future of this? How will we use Bitcoin in 10 years?
Yeah, it's a very good question that we obviously are thinking about quite a lot, right? Like, again, like coming to usability, you don't want to ideally, you want to sort of consolidate the hardware, and not even hardware, like everything, into like as sort of narrow use cases as you can. That being said, I don't think there is any time soon will be, this is going to be possible, right? Because there's like many reasons for this, but one, so maybe just starting with the use cases, I think it totally makes sense to use, you know, some custody of or software wallet, as you guys have, like to keep it on your phone and sort of top up, you know, for payments, et cetera, et cetera. So, because as you would probably wouldn't walk with like a briefcase full of cash, everything you own to pay for your coffee, right? Like you wouldn't probably do that. You wouldn't probably like carry 5 kilos of cash and to just pay for, you know, like a flat white and a local coffee shop. So that's the similar analogy with Trezor, where you keep, you know, your savings and that's the digital gold stuff. And then you also want to pay, and you want to enable sort of this use case where you simply, you know, pay through Lightning or simply on chain. But like anytime soon where I would see this is everything's going to live on our phone, I don't think that's going to happen for us. I mean, I don't think it's going to be secure enough. That's what I'm trying to say. Because simply these big tech companies, I mean, it's everything is closed sourced. You don't really see what's happening on the hardware. There's still many sort of vectors of attacks that how we can get to mobile phones. So, so I think that's exactly why we exist as a company, and that's why actually the hardware wallets are quite, I would say, simple devices, and they're like single use devices. They're specifically for one use case and one use case only, right? So, and that's why it makes it a bit more easy to check on the security and make sure everything's going on right, like everything's going sort of safely, and the way the private keys are stored and managed is basically secure. Because if you take it into very complex systems, then, you know, like sort of, yeah, the possibilities how to attack those keys are simply greater. So that's something we are aware of, and that's why, you know, the reason for this relatively simple offline device that is disconnected from everything else makes a lot of sense. You know, that being said, is there going to be some tech where this will enable us to somehow more consolidate it with other, you know, devices that we use as humans? Maybe we are not seeing it now, but you know, it always happened in the history that like something impossible happened at the end, right? So we just have to stay sort of on top. But like, I'm trying to say, like, the security is will be always paramount for us as a company, as a self, you know, like self custody, cold storage, B2C company, that will be always like paramount. So we'll always like look for, we'll always be on the side of the spectrum of like the security is absolute must, right? Like we cannot do any sort of trade-offs there.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. And I mean, on the other hand, we didn't end up with just one device that does everything. Yes, we have our iPhone or smartphone, whatever, and this does a lot, most of it, but we also have laptops. You also wear AirPods.
Yeah, correct.
There, you know, I speak to a microphone. This new Apple Vision Pro, kind of the glasses, you know. So there are several devices that we use kind of in an interconnected way, in a wireless way. But we use different ones for different needs, right? Apple Watch, you know, whatever. There's many of them. So that makes sense that you could also have a dedicated device that is optimized just for security and simplicity, not much more. But it just, I mean, if it is about handling your money, then you want it to be exactly that. You want it to be simple, user-friendly, and super secure, right? Exactly. So that makes sense. Do you think the big tech players, mainly thinking about Apple here, or maybe also Google and others, do you think they will come out at one point as well with a hardware wallet and basically be competitive for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, hard to tell, honestly. I'm not sure. I again, like, I'm not seeing them. I don't see that happening anytime soon. Maybe if, you know, basically we see this like hyper Bitcoinization and we see like more people coming, you know, maybe it will become more of a relevant market to them. You know, I think I mentioned there was like half a billion crypto users, basically, you know, in any kind of form. That's still, I think, pretty small for them, but, you know, getting bigger. Basically, we expect the number to triple over the next bull market. So you know, it might become more relevant. But again, I think the point, at least the part of the industry where we are at, or the main value proposition that we are offering to our users, is, you know, the open source, the transparency, the meaning that, you know, it's auditable by the professional community and by the experts that can read code and that can really, like, there's a lot of people that constantly sort of auditing us. And, you know, as we can see, that's not going to happen with the big tech, right? So you know, what I think they might deliver to the market would be the scale, which, by the way, would be probably ultimately good for, you know, for Bitcoin and for the whole industry, because they would basically, you know, more people would have access to it. So I think it would be better for everybody, you know, like us and you guys, like, you know, companies in a different side of the spectrum, but like, I mean, different, you know, parts of the industry, but still, you know, working on the same, ultimately the same thing. So I think it would be probably good, but in terms of like a marketing. But if it's going to be a direct competition to us, I don't think so, honestly, right? So because we have really tried to be, we are quite, I would say, strict about the way we do things. And maybe coming back to our founders again, like they really didn't want to build the company to make money, but they really wanted to secure their own Bitcoins, right? Like it started with their own, you know, personal need, because they had some issues with it and you know, get some Bitcoins got stolen, et cetera, et cetera. And again, so I think that we are, you know, quite a bit of a mission-driven company, which I think is good if we connect it to the business side of things as well. So that's why, I can see to answer your question, I think the big tech might eventually join the space, but I think there will be still a lot of sort of, you know, space for everybody else, including us.
Yeah, I also don't think that this is going to be a winner-takes-it-all game. Not at all. I mean, same for the exchanges and brokers and like financial service providers. So the industry we are in, I mean, you can already see now how many banks are there, how many neobanks are there, how many fintech caps are there. You know, so there's just this is something that allows for a lot of niche players, and you know, focusing on different things, focusing on different target audiences. Some are bigger, like Goldman Sachs and stuff, but some are very small. Even in Switzerland, we have like more than 150 banks in a very small country with 8 million people, right? So I think in Europe there are around 5,000 banks, and the same I think is true for hardware wallets. There will be also different niches and different needs from people that different players will solve differently. There will be big ones, maybe big tech, maybe like Ledger and stuff, but there will also be these other players. So that's going to be interesting to see. So moving on more the software that is on these devices, on this Trezor. So you said you are integrating in an open source way different ways to buy and sell Bitcoin, to maybe also DCA Bitcoin. I think at one point you also had DCA player in there, and also like portfolio tracking, so that you see the price movements and everything. What else is planned there? And maybe also, how do you evaluate partners? Because you don't do this yourself, right? You integrate other brokers, correct, like for example Relay. Hopefully at one point we will be integrated also in your ecosystem. How do you evaluate these partners, and what are the next steps there? What are you looking for integrating next?
Yeah, so generally, this maybe just a bit of a disclaimer. So Trezor is one of four companies that is within Satoshi Labs Holding Group. So this is like sort of this group of companies where, you know, the founders are still the same founders. And the company that is doing all these like integrations is called Invity. They are basically, by the way, launching also their custody app. And, you know, they integrate these features that we, you know, just mentioned, but like buy, sell, exchanges, DCA, etc., into Trezor Suite, which Trezor Suite is the interface of Trezor, where you basically, when you buy the hardware wallet, you just get like a QR code where which links you basically to download the app, both for your desktop and the mobile, and then you can do all these things. So in terms of what is sort of the future, so, and the way, I cannot talk about but like the specifics, how they choose the partners, but basically it's definitely all about like a philosophical alignment. Of course, it's the fees, it's the actual business deals, you know, because it still need to, you know, make, of course, like a business sense. It's also the KYC rules, et cetera. And what, like the bigger sort of challenge that we have for what we want to focus on right now is that Trezor Suite, because we mentioned this portfolio tracking, we want to get it basically much, much better, right? Like, again, like talking about usability and talking about the target audience being getting people out of exchanges to enjoy, you know, self-custody with a hardware wallet. You want to give them these users the option to basically come off, you know, the Binances and the Coinbases of the world and come to us and still enjoy a lot of those features that they were used to, right? So, and this portfolio checking, we have these nice graphs, but we want to make them much better. So you basically, you know, see what's happening, and as your hard link, how you're basically making over time, and etc. How you are doing as a user over time, with your assets in general. So, but we also implement features that are purely, for example, for some privacy enhancement. So you probably heard of us implementing CoinJoin, or so it's basically a way how you can, you know, anonymize transactions on the Bitcoin network. So. Yeah, I would say it's a combination of really the core self-custody features. Self-custody being, I always say it's a privacy multiplied by security multiplied by usability. So basically these three areas that are important. And then we also add this additional features that we also, you know, may basically make business of and create additional revenue, not just for selling the hardware, but also, you know, based on the sort of the fee model.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool. And how is that going? Are you envisioning many different players, like this kind of like an ecosystem that also compete within your Trezor suite? Or will you have like preferred players only integrating maybe 1, 2, 3? Or will it be like in the end, are you trying to offer a plethora of kind of an overview of the whole market with all the different pros and cons?
Yeah, currently it is based more on this competition model where basically there's multiple players and based on the offer that they give the users, you know, such as the fee or the sort of the rate, the exchange rate, if you're, for example, exchanging from one coin to another. So now it's more this competition model. Mm-hmm. But also I think we, in general, as a company, we are a bit, a bit more pragmatic and... So we want to protect the users, right? So we don't want to implement just anything, like to make it like completely like app storage thing where we would just wouldn't care who comes in and they can do whatever they want. I don't think we are ever going to do that because we don't think that's right. We don't think that's great. So let's say it's like a bit of a hand selection process where we want to make sure the partners are the right ones, right? And that, they have our interest, their interest of our users is they have it in mind and you're sort of aligned. Interest in serving the users well.
Makes sense. Absolutely. So you're obviously fascinated about creating products for people to hold Bitcoin, and you think that billions of people will hold Bitcoin. So then this leads me to my last question that I ask to everyone. How many Bitcoins do you hold? I mean, obviously you don't need to tell us the number of Bitcoins, but like how much of your wealth do you hold in Bitcoin and how much of these Bitcoin are in cold storage?
Yeah, so let me think. In my case, I guess I can say it. So it's like 80% I'm kind of like laser eyes, I guess. And of course, like, yeah, exactly. And of course, like all of it is in cold storage. So
okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it seems to be also an amount where it makes sense. Oh, that's maybe also another, this is my last question. From when on, like what amounts do make sense to start with a hardware wallet? I mean, obviously if it's 80% of your net worth, then, you know, it's a no-brainer. It makes sense because it's a lot of money. But if, you know, a lot of people start with, you know, putting 1% or 2%, 3% of their net worth in, this is also a question we get sometimes, like from when on, which amounts it does make sense to invest in a hardware wallet? Because to be honest, I mean, a Relay wallet or any other non-custodial wallet on your mobile phone is also quite secure. I mean, I don't have a problem, for example, storing a couple of K worth of Bitcoin on my phone because it's in, you know, it's open source, it's a non-custodial wallet with tens of thousands of users. No one ever got a security issue, you know, so. So maybe this is also, do you have a clear answer on that?
I don't have a super specific answer. I think it really depends, as you said, the percentages, right? I think it depends on the person's net worth, income, et cetera, et cetera. So an absolute number is not possible to state, I guess, right? Because it depends what the person owns and what they are willing to sort of put there. And also, I guess it's a lot about like risk aversity as well, like because I think the traditional advice to Bitcoin is like, it's all alternative investment and you should like kind of count on losing it or you should be fine like losing it all. Which of course, like I think we are in this space, so we are not as, we don't see it like that way. But yeah, I don't even know if I can say like a percentage, like how much. I would have to, I guess, somehow calculate it like better. But I think in general, like, let's say, I think it's totally okay. Like we actually even say it as a self-custody cold storage company, we even say it's totally okay. Put it into software wallet, you know, put it into even custody. It's fine, but don't just don't keep there like those 90% of your assets or, you know, don't do it because that's way too risky. And as again, like coming to the example of like, you carrying a suitcase, you know, full of cash around the city. You don't want to do that, right? So, and even worse, of course, in these situations, it's like online. So it's the ways to attack those online sources are, of course, like much greater, right? So I would say like keep a couple percent on you know, like anything that's not self-custody cold storage.
And you don't know, maybe it could even make sense for small amounts if you plan to hold it for a long time. Like if you buy just some sats now worth maybe $50 or $100, yes, maybe it feels like it doesn't make sense to invest $100, like the same amount, for a hardware wallet. So that wouldn't make sense. But if you plan to hold it for 10 years and it 10x's or maybe 100x's until then, well, then it makes sense, right? So might as well just already start properly now with small amounts. Or also if you do DCA, you are consolidating, you're amassing more and more, a bigger stack. And at one point it will be worth it to invest these $100 just in enhanced security.
Yeah, totally. Like, I think the great, like, for example, use case that you mentioned is like, you know, you can buy, for example, through the Relay app, but also have a hardware wallet where you basically, you simply buy it on, you know, two clicks in your app, and then you send it to the self-custody, like the hardware wallet, exactly. Right? So I think that's probably the best, like, overall experience that you can have. And that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Matej, for taking the time. Thanks for being here. Any last words you wanna say to the Relay and European Bitcoin community?
Buy Trezor. I guess that's my job. I mean, I have to say that.
Buy Trezor and keep stuck in the Relay.
Yeah. So no, thanks a lot for having me. It was fun chatting with you. And happy to be in Zurich and in your beautiful country. And and once I'm back, let's grab a lunch. And if you're in Prague, like, you have to do that as well.
Absolutely. That's gonna be fun. Maybe you'll also be in Lugano at the Plan B Forum, so you can hang out there.
Yeah, we could do that as well.
Nice, that would be nice. All right, enjoy the Swiss mountains, man. Thanks for your time, it was a big pleasure. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, ciao.
Cheers.